Welcome, everybody, to the 18th episode of Strength Academy. Mundo, once again here, joined with Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
And we are going to talk about some of the things that we've experienced in the past week with the AO finals in Milwaukee, and then we'll move on to some other stuff that we've been kind of mulling over because of some of the things that we ran into with a couple of our athletes, and hopefully give them some help and give y'all some help too if you're struggling with any of the same type of things that they are.
Yeah, it was an awesome trip, man. I feel like, well, with the exception of both Mundo and I missing our flights out of New Mexico, that was not according to plan, but we still got there on time, and the hotel was actually really well situated. I felt like there was a wide variety of food that was close by, so you weren't limited to only what was in the hotel. There was a Walgreens, and you could, so we could buy some Epsom salts, and, everything was pretty well condensed. I thought the venue was nice. Overall, I mean, I didn't really have any complaints about the venue this go around. Hotel food's always too expensive, but that's going to be wherever you go.
Yeah, that's true. I like the venue this time around. I like when things are connected to the hotel or in the hotel's part of, the building or the collection of buildings that are around it. And this one had a sky bridge going to the convention center from the Hyatt. And I thought that was really cool. One thing I didn't really like about the hotel was they have this open structure. So there's no hallways really. It's just this big gigantic square and all the rooms face the center, like the doors face the center of the hotel, and you can hear everything. So there's people up at 2 a.m. yelling and carrying on and getting drunk and things like that. And, we still have people lifting or, people are still trying to make sure they get enough sleep for the next couple days if they're not, going within the first few sessions, or they're sleeping late into the afternoon because they have a late session. So all this noise, it just carries really loudly into all the rooms in the hotel. So that's one thing I really didn't like. The proximity of food was good. The quality of the venue itself was good. It was a little bit small. Like the training area was small.
That's true.
And the warm-up area was kind of small. There was these guys, I don't remember what barbell club they were from. Was it YN something? I don't remember exactly where they were from, but like if I remembered the name, I would call them out for sure. But they were getting really mad that people were crossing near their platform when their lifters were warming up, and they were like physically trying to block people from walking near their platform, and they were yelling at people and getting really upset. And then a couple of them, they actually put hands on people. Like,
yeah, I saw that.
I was like, ugh.
Yeah, that's bad. I just think, if you find yourself in a situation where there is a lot of that condensed chaos, and those front warm-up platforms by the screens in the back are always going to be busy and kind of crowded. And while it makes for really easy going back and forth and getting the count, and you can kind of watch the screen from your platform, I mean, you have to anticipate that there's going to be people standing directly in front of that platform and moving all around. But yeah, when I saw them like actually like putting their hands on people's chest to like stop them from moving and telling them to go around, I was like, oh man, I hope that's... It seemed a little... I don't know if they were just having a bad day or like, I don't know, but it seemed a little bit too aggressive.
Yeah, it was really ballsy. And I understand that there's etiquette and you want to be as respectful as you can. And we're all in the same situation. We're all trying to get to the monitors. We're trying to make sure our lifters are getting the warm-ups they need leading up to their attempts. And it's chaotic. There's a lot going on. There's three platforms. There's people going back and forth, not just in your session, but from the sessions next to you, maybe, trying to figure out if they have lifters more than one session, they're going back and forth that way too. So if you park right in front of the monitors, you're going to have some patience. And deal with it, because unfortunately that's one of the spots where people are going to be in your space almost the entire time. And for you to say, you know, yell at people and tell them to go around or not to cross your platform, or, you know, don't step in front of their lifter when they're lifting, it's a bit unrealistic of an expectation to have. And being mad and actually putting your hands on people, like forcefully pushing people out of the way, like that's really, like, I wouldn't have tolerated it. Like, I saw them get one guy actually physically put both hands on him and move him away from the platform. And yeah, like I said, I don't remember exactly where they're from. If I did, I'd call them out. I'd be like, look, this is the club that was doing it, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it's just like, it strikes me as that, like, it's you're really crossing a line when you're, you know, getting into somebody else's personal space mm-hmm. like that. And you know, there's polite ways to do that. You know, you can just say, hey man, sorry, it's a little distracted, can you just like move over a little bit? But I think that, you know, you always want in training, I'm a big believer in, you know, if somebody's lifting heavy or setting up for a lift, you know, wait for them to go and then go across. But you should also, as an athlete, be prepared and so focused on what you're doing that you're trying to minimize that distraction. So, like, you should be able to lift in a crowd of people. This is a little off topic, a little more recent, but we had one of our athletes do a CrossFit competition for fun. She's been doing some CrossFit a couple days a week, and they had some max snatch and clean and jerk in there. And that's an environment that I think a lot of weightlifters would really struggle to lift heavy in, because it's just that, like, you know, crowded room, you have to load your own plates, you only get 10 minutes to find your max, like right. That kind of CrossFit setup for finding a heavy lift is like a big test of mental toughness. And I think that if you kind of prepare yourself before you get to the meet, that it might not be as pristine condition as you're used to.
Right.
You know, you're not gonna, you know, it's that, you know, premeditation where you're like, hey, okay, this might happen. There might be somebody walking around. There might be five people standing in front of me talking about what's happening, and I just have to lift. So kind of mentally preparing for that, I think, is important. And then, you know, just respect people's personal space. It's like, it's weird when you start getting pushy.
Yeah. And keep in mind, this is the 73B session. Like, there was no medal jockeying. There wasn't any vying for position as far as like podium spots. This is the B session of the 73s. And these people are just being absolutely ridiculous in what they were trying to avoid having to deal with. And the whole thing this year was showcased with stuff like that going on in the C, B sessions. Like, people doing ridiculous stuff. Do you want to talk about the one with
first lifter up that weekend was Robin. She went first in, I think, the 55C session. And when you weigh in, you're allowed to declare what you want for your openers to be. And you're allowed to change each declaration twice. But usually, you know, I'm kind of a believer in, we make a plan going in, and we tend to stick to that plan pretty well. So we may change an opener occasionally, but most of the time we know exactly what we're going to be doing, and we stick to that plan. So when we see the screen, I think there were 9 lifts at 60 kilos, and we were opening at 63? 62. So we thought, okay, we'll have... We'll have about 9 attempts, so we're warming up with that in mind. And all of a sudden, as soon as that first minute clock starts, there was 10 minutes at the beginning of the session that not a bar was lifted. Everybody rearranged and changed, and we went from being 9 attempts out and on track to being 3 lifts out and needing to really rush.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's a very difficult thing to do. And this almost served as a perfect example of how if you train appropriately and you're prepared for your competition, things can go atrociously wrong in the back, and you can still end up with a good performance at the meet. So Robin, you know, had to really rush and kind of do these three lifts back to back to make sure that she had a little bit of rest before going out on the platform. And on both the first and second attempt, you know, we were on the most distracted platform. We were on that front platform where there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of people moving around. And, you know, she missed her final warm-up attempt. And it was a miss behind. And we just had to say, all right, we're not going to be able to do another one. But now you know what that feels like. We're going to go out and make it. And I was really proud of her for being able to put that together where, you know, having a rush and a miss in the back and going out to make a really, really good snatch on the first and second attempt. You know, the adversity of kind of that that change in situation. But what's kind of frustrating with that is, you know, if you're, if you know you're not going to do 60 and you're in the C session, like, you're not trying to vie for medal spots. So I can understand putting a low opener to see where everybody else is going to fall if you think that you can get a, you know, medal in the clean and jerk or the snatch, and then picking your weights accordingly. But when you're lifting against 15 other people that you're all just there to make PRs, like, you, there's no need to make this any more complicated. And I can understand from a coach's perspective wanting to practice, you know, making those jumps and kind of like gaming the system a little bit. But I think overall, you know, it's just, I don't know if it's just like thinking too highly of like what you're doing. It's like, no, man, get your lifters out there and get them to make lifts. So this crazy jump around, I don't know. It's just not my approach, and I don't really fully understand why you need to use both changes on every attempt that you do if you kind of already have a plan set and you know what you're trying to go for.
Well, I don't know if it's a lack of coaching experience that caused it, or if people are really just idiots. Because the thing is you have people, you have, what, 12 lifters in the C session, right? They're all grouped together by total, and they're all opening around the same weight. It's like, none of you guys are vying for medals from the C session, or at least you shouldn't be. Like, if you just suck it up and join the A session, if that's what your total is going to be, is an A session total, right? If you got shuffled back, that's one thing. But if you intentionally, like, sandbagged your total just so you could try to lift like you do at home, you know, be the last person to go the whole time, like, just suck it up and compete with people that you're actually going to be competing with the medal for. And, you know, fine, if you don't, whatever. But from the C session, don't open at 60 with 9 other people opening at 60, and then everybody changed their openers by 1 kilo, and then 9 lifts later, or 9, like, changes later, then somebody's actually going. Like, you guys are stupid.
It just sort of seemed like nobody wanted to go first.
Right.
So, you know, they were like, oh, I don't... So the first 60, just like, oh, I'll go to 62 so I'm not first. And then the other person's like, well, I'm not ready. I don't want to go. And it was just this cascade. And it came back. I think there were a lot of lifts made in that session. And once things got going after that first 10 minutes, the snatch progression was, you know, just normal. Like, it was fine. The same thing, there weren't as many crazy changes on the clean and jerk, but it was just really funny seeing these people scramble about, it's like, oh, I don't want to be the first lift of the session.
Right.
Like, I mean, I guess that's a little bit of pressure as a lifter to be the first one out there, but I don't know. It was pretty funny. But Robin ended up with a PR total, or just under her PR total from universities.
Yeah.
And made a lot of sound technical improvements. We managed to fix, she had a problem landing with one toe, one heel up in the snatch. We managed to squash that, had a very good performance there, and hit some really, really good quality jerks. And I think it was a competition PR for the clean and jerk.
Yeah. Five for six. It's a good day.
Yeah, it was very nice. Next up that day, we had Riley. That was the session with the manhandlers in the front platform.
The handsy folks.
But that was a pretty good session. Riley was coming out after Vegas. We had a not so good day in the snatch, so we opened pretty conservatively. And he made his second and third after a little hiccup on the first. Again, that kind of pressure of being really early on in the session. But, you know, the 98 and 102 were there, and he was able to take a crack at breaking his record for the clean and jerk, but was called for a press out. So he ended a few kilos under his all-time best from a local competition. But it was, I think, his best total in a meet of that size, and it was his first American Open finals. So I think that was a good day. And I think, you know, he went out and made lifts. Again, we've been really working on jerk positioning for him, and I was very pleased to see how those first two jerks looked. Just a little bit of tiredness on that last rep led to that press out. But I think it was a really solid performance, and it was good to get him out on the national, like, you know, the I don't want to say true national stage, but yeah, you know, not regional.
The national level, yeah. It's a national level meet.
So for a first finals, I think that was really nice. It went really well. You know, he had pulled a rib, I think 2 weeks, 10 days before the competition. So he had to go get an adjustment and had to take a few days off. So all in all, I'd say that was a nice performance and a good baseline for what we're going to be looking to beat at University Nationals here in March and American Open again next year. Let's see. Saturday, we just had Tyler lifting. He had a just awesome performance. He, I think, did 120 in the snatch, which he did in Las Vegas, but at a weight class higher because he competed at 89 in Vegas. So at weight at 81 kilos, he did 120 and then moved up his clean and jerk record to 159, going 3 for 3 on that clean and jerk with the opposite problem that Robin had, where it wasn't a rush. And I mean, I guess Robin had some long waits between two, but I think between the first and second attempt in Tyler's session, did we have, 15 minutes or so?
Yeah, it was roughly 15 minutes.
Between attempts and, you know, just getting that. And it's cool because you can see that, you know, his experience in the meets is getting to where he's confident and we know what he needs to do between lifts. And we kind of have that routine down and it came together for a 5 for 6 day, moving up the total and clean and jerk records for him here in New Mexico. So that was, again, a pretty good day.
A solid day for Tyler.
Dee's performance was the first one on Sunday, and that was really good. She had been having some issues in the last year, dealing with an injury and kind of working through some stuff. And this was just a huge comeback meet, going 93 in the snatch and 110 in the clean and jerk. And, you know, because we've been having some off meets, we were put in the B session by the grouping by total, but she managed to take fifth place overall. And fourth place in the snatch, you know, so placing in the top of the A session from that B session performance. So that was a really cool, she was on point the whole time. It was really nice.
Yeah, and I think she's ranked 8th nationwide. Yeah. You know, so
that's really good to see. She's going to be doing a local meet here in January where she's going to try to move down to 81 for a meet, see how that feels. I think, we in New Mexico, we don't have any current state records for that 81 class. I think she wants to go.
Yeah,
in
she
and
wants to scoop those up before.
Scoop those up before anybody else gets to them.
Yeah.
I think, so we've been working with Consuelo on, you know, getting her out to that AO finals, and you know, she made it, but we didn't exactly have a very long, I think she qualified the last weekend you could.
Yeah.
So, you know, we didn't have an extremely long training cycle leading into it, but I think she snatched, I want to say 4 or 5 kilos better than she did in Las Vegas, which was kind of her first meet of that size.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she ran into some trouble with, you know, going under the bar on the clean and jerk, just kind of had a, you know, if you call it a brain fart or just kind of a hiccup there. So she didn't get the day that she wanted on the clean and jerk. But I think what's important to remember, if, you know, you're not learning if you're not failing at a certain point. And, you know, what I think's important is, like, if you have a day like that where you have that kind of a hiccup or a bomb out or whatever it is, it's not that thing happening that's, you know, inherently good or bad. It's the reaction that you get from it. And if, you know, you let a setback like that or a bad performance hold you back, versus using that as a kind of fuel to kind of reassess and do better next time, or kind of give yourself a direction or a push to keep working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's really important to not dwell on failure as a, you know, abhorrent thing that's to be avoided all the time, but to look at it as, yeah, I had a, you know, bad day, I didn't do what I wanted, but using that as encouragement to keep moving forward, because nobody who's ever been successful at anything has been perfect all the time, and you need these sort of lessons to kind of show you what areas you need to work on the most. And if you use them as kind of a learning experience, I feel like it's a better way to look at, you know, having a poor performance or you know, just an off day, you know, using those things to kind of help give you direction for what you need to do next. Like, what do you kind of think? Like, what do you think, like lessons to be learned from, you know, just having those times where it's just like, and I just, something, the wheels fell off somewhere, you know, like, how do you kind of use things that you've failed with in your personal life to, like, kind of re-inspire you to double down, or?
Well, sometimes it just depends on what it is and how, like, how the failure came about. If it was something that I absolutely gave my best toward and it didn't work out, and, you know, it just didn't come together that day, that's one thing. But on another hand, if it's just, you know, I didn't do the prep work that I needed to, I wasn't focused, I wasn't in it to give it my best, then that, there's a separation for me between why am I doing it and for what reason, and is it worth doing? So, for instance, if I was going hunting, I usually bow hunt. I didn't get any tags this year, but I usually bow hunt. And sometimes, like, I'll practice every weekend. You know, I'll try almost every weekend leading up to a hunt. And just to make sure that I'm dialed in enough to where I know that if I need to make a shot at a specific distance, I can make that shot and not hesitate. Now, if I know that I go out there and I can't make a shot and I try anyway and I end up losing my arrow, or I end up, like, wounding an animal instead of actually getting a good clean shot on it, like, I have to take responsibility and say, well, I didn't really do my best, and should I have even tried to do it at that point? Because for me, if I'm doing something and I'm not gonna put a full effort into it, then why even bother? Because you're half-assing things. And just to say that I went out hunting, it's not good enough. And I think that when people do these things where, like, they sign up for a competition and they don't do as well as they wanted to, is it because they didn't prepare? Is it because they didn't want it? Is it because, you know, they didn't have the skill sets? When I've encountered failure and it's because of something that I failed to do, then I usually try to assess, you know, how do I move forward? But if it's a failure because I didn't even, you know, give it my best shot, my best effort, I didn't even try, that's an indication that maybe I shouldn't really be doing that thing anymore. And sometimes you have to make that decision. You have to make a decision based on, you know, this is like a career path, right? Let's say you wanted to be a Major League Baseball player and you spent 20 years in the minor leagues. At what point do you say, I'm probably not going to be a Major League Baseball player anymore? I need to find something else to do. So for some people, it's not a matter of like, oh, well, I'm not going to be an elite weightlifter, so why even try? That's not what I'm saying. It's like, if you're going to be a weightlifter, you have to figure out how to get under the weight. There's no other point to doing it, right? You can be the best squatter in the world. You can have the most perfect technique, but if there's something stopping you from getting underneath the bar, you need to figure that out quick, because the whole point of weightlifting is to be under the bar.
And I think that kind of goes back to what you were talking about with using that assessment as looking at what skill sets do you need, right? So, well, one, I think just like learning to analyze what went wrong and whether that was a external factor or a failure of preparation or just needing to have a new approach to something. So say, you know, if we're back to the hunting analogy, you're practicing a certain style or way of controlling your breath in the shot, and you go out hunting and, you know, you find that, you know, you're really distracted, so your accuracy is off.
Right.
You know, it's a skill to be able to take a look at, you know, okay, I thought I did the preparation for this, but something went wrong that minute. You know, having the skill to look at it and say, okay, well, where did the error lie in my preparation? And then how am I going to reassess and not let this push me back down, but kind of look at it as, okay, well, I have the strength down, or I have your technique down in the bow draw. I have this, but you know, okay, well, I need to work on concentration as I let go of the string.
Right.
You know, so using that as a kind of incentive to look towards, okay, well, what skill sets do I want to develop, and then how am I going to go about doing those?
See, but what I'm talking about, though, is to bring it back to hunting, is like being afraid to let the arrow go. You've practiced, you've done your stalking, your breathing technique, everything. You have the shot. It's right there in front of you. It's the distance you need it to be, and you just don't want to pull the trigger. It's like, so should you call yourself a hunter if you're not going to shoot an arrow? If you're not going to try to go for whatever it is you're hunting? That's what I'm drawing this back to, is that, like, if you call yourself a hunter, but you're so afraid to pull the trigger and release that arrow, then should you be a hunter? Or can you call yourself a hunter?
Well, and I think that's where, you know, you need to be able to kind of look at, you know, figure out where that hesitation comes from. Because I'm sure that, you know, in that realm of hunting, you know, you have times that you prepare well and you feel like everything's going really well, and then you're still met with that moment of hesitation or that, you know, loss of concentration when it counts. And I think that kind of comes back to the, you know, performance under pressure and saying, okay, well, I know that in practice I can do these things really well, but it's, there's something about, you know, being out in the woods that, you know, makes you hesitate or fearful. And I think that, you know, trying to expand your skill sets to kind of find out what reasons are kind of leading you to have those kind of blocks for performance are, you know, pretty helpful. Because I think that, you know, all athletes have struggles like that. Everybody gets to a point where it's, you know, I can't snatch 85 kilos, but I can snatch 87 kilos. You know, like, right. Everybody, like, you have a block on a number. Or how many times have you seen people stall at 100 kilos for any number of lifts? Where, because they're thinking of it differently, right? So yeah. It's like, oh, it's not just 95 plus 5. It's, oh, no, this is 100. And for some reason in the head, that's kind of a different thing. So I think trying to develop strategies for performance is really important. And, you know, this American Open has really made me realize as a coach, as like in my assessment of how, you know, we did preparing everybody, was maybe we need to do, like, figure out more ways to work on mental preparation for competition. And you and I were kind of talking earlier that sometimes it's really hard to give advice in those situations if you haven't dealt with that particular kind of adversity right. before. And I think that it's really important for coaches too, when you run into an issue that you haven't personally dealt with, to kind of redouble your own efforts to look at, okay, well, what are the ways that we can work on this, and what are some strategies that we can try to include in training?
Yeah.
And I think that probably one of the best ones, if you are the kind of person that tends to do better in practice than competition, or, you know, you have a certain block with certain weights, I think that really working on, and this was something that we were talking with Derek about, is that the biggest way to improve your self-confidence is smaller successes. You can't just sit down and say, I'm going to be more confident today.
Right.
You have to do things that make you feel accomplished. So doing things like, if you are stuck at a certain weight, doing lifts just at the verge of where you're stuck until you get really comfortable and moving up a kilo, and learning that it's like, okay, I can have success here. And with competitions, I think, you know, maybe doing more local competitions and just not pushing quite as hard, but doing lots of 6 for 6 performances, you know, because success kind of builds on itself. And it's really hard to force yourself to, you know, try to kind of fake that confidence.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, doing things enough times that you get used to succeeding at things. And I think that, you know, that repeated success built into a training program or into, you know, gearing towards local meets, those sort of things can be really helpful for kind of trying to take a step back and rebuild that confidence in those situations. But I think the other aspect has to be, in my opinion, kind of how like, are you, like we've talked about before, like, are you really mean to yourself?
Yeah.
Like, if you scratch an opener and immediately you're just like, oh no, I'm doing this again, instead of, I need to take a second, I'll go back out and make that.
Right.
You know, like, how do we... So that's going to be kind of my homework, I think, as, you know, evaluating how things went, is I need to do a little bit more research into sports psychology and how to kind of build some of those success experiences and build that confidence, you know, through a variety of things. And I think that, you know, sometimes it doesn't even have to be weightlifting. You know?
I was going to say, like, I was just going to bring up, so let's take away the whole idea of weightlifting in sports or anything like that. And how many times have you gone up to a girl and asked her out when you're perfectly stone cold sober in the middle of the day?
Yeah, never.
Never? Never tried it. Not once.
I typically don't talk to strangers.
Okay.
I'm too awkward. But
so maybe this is a bad example, but like a while back, I learned to force myself to talk to somebody. If I was interested, I would go up to them and be like, hey, I'd introduce myself and just say something like, oh, your dress is really pretty. It brings out the color of your eyes. Or, hey, I really like the style of, whatever you're wearing. And just as to pay a compliment, and maybe not even ask for a number or a date, just to pay a stranger a compliment. And I had to force myself to learn to do that because it's very intimidating. It's very hard to go up to somebody and that you don't know and say, hi, my name's so-and-so. I just thought you were really pretty and I just pay you a quick compliment. You know, have a nice day. And that's it. But to do that takes a lot of, I don't know what you would call it. Courage.
Yeah, self-assurance.
But the thing is, like, you can't be afraid of being rejected, and part of what keeps people from doing things is the fear of failure, the fear of rejection, the fear of not being good at what they what they're trying to accomplish. I don't know if have you ever tried to drift in a vehicle before, like a rear-wheel drive vehicle, like practicing on the racing track. I'm not talking about like down the side streets like a dumbass wannabe street racer. I'm talking
about like on the racetrack. I've only skidded out accidentally on some ice before. But, okay.
So when I lived in California, there was a racetrack and we would practice. It wasn't, it was a dirt track, like a rally racing track. And so we would practice drifting, letting the back end break loose and using the momentum of the car to swing the weight and distribute it to where the car would continue in that curve and then keep speed as you accelerated out of the turn. So it's a really unsettling feeling to know that the verge of the amount of control you have over that situation is very minimal. And you have to be able to, on some level, let go of being afraid of what's going to happen if it completely falls off the wheels, like the wheels come off. But I don't know, maybe it's just my experience of trying to not be stagnant. And that's where all the self-improvement stuff comes from, all the self-optimization, like all these books, they're all just trying to teach you one thing, and that's to take action. Because if you're not, you're collecting underpants. Right? And that's, we were talking about this before. It's like you can read every self-help book out there. You can read every self-optimization. You can listen to every Tony Robbins lecture. You can go on YouTube and look up 50 TED Talks about how to fake it till you make it and be confident and improve. But all that means nothing if you're not willing to actually do something with that information. And so it goes back to hunting and pulling that release, that arrow. Can you do it? In that moment, when you have the shot perfectly lined up, all you have to do is press that release. Can you do it? Can you go up to that girl and just give her a compliment? Or can you ask her for her number? You know, that's the difference to me. That's the difference between somebody that's going to continue to try to improve and be good at whatever it is that they're going to put their efforts toward. If you want to be a good weightlifter, you guess what? You have to get under the bar. Like being able to squat the weight doesn't mean anything. Being able to deadlift it off the ground doesn't mean anything. Pulling it off the ground to hip height or whatever height you would need to get it to get under it doesn't mean anything unless you actually get under it. It's not knowledge of the thing itself. It's not awareness. It's doing the thing itself. And I think that's the best advice. If you care to listen to anything that I've ever said, the best advice that I can ever give you is to do something. Do something.
Well, and that's the idea of, that ties exactly into that repeated experience where, you need that action, right? And that's, I think, the gist of a lot of these, books is you can read about you know, say, you know, journaling throughout the day to, you know, kind of get your thoughts down and clear your head and kind of, you know, use that as kind of a therapeutic approach to, like, I felt anxious at this time and this is what I was thinking about. And you can read about all the benefits of keeping a journal or doing a meditation practice. And you can read about the benefits of this certain nutrition paradigm. Right. But the key thing that, you know, you need to do is not even big steps, but just first steps. Like, you know, like, get up in the morning and do your stretches. And it's not necessarily that you need to, you know, that the stretching itself is going to be changing what you do at 3 p.m. later that day, but maybe getting up, doing some breathing and a couple quick stretches, that's the first step towards making it to that practice. You know, you're kind of breaking up these larger things that you need to do into, like, well, I got up and I drank a big glass of water and I did my breathing routine or I did my stretching routine.
Right.
And you're kind of letting these small steps kind of build you towards making those overall changes. Because, you know, I liked that, you know, collecting underpants gnome reference because, you know, like you said, it's that if you're just hoarding information but not acting on any of it, you know, you can read about trying to have, you know, positive mental attitude in the way that you're approaching training and life and, you know, working on and, like, all these little tips of how you can work on yourself. But the first thing I would say is it might even be more important to have, you know, pick one thing from one book and just do that one thing first.
Yeah.
Because what I worry is with all of the various degrees of, you know, books about mindset and how to, you know, whether it's like The Art of Not Giving an F, you know. Or like yeah. any of these sort of things, like, I think you can get bogged down by having a lot of information, but really just taking those first steps of, like, okay, well, I'm going to just, you know, try to quiet my mind today. And I'm going to start implementing my 2 minutes of meditation practice.
Right.
You know, that's a first step. Okay, well, I'm going to make sure that I stretch after training. Not because, you know, it's going to help you recover, but it's because you're building things around that outcome that you're after. And trying to, if you're always focused on the larger goal, you know, sometimes you need those little process things. And building success of, like, oh, well, I did my stretches every day this week. I'm on the right track.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I made it to practice and took shorter rests than usual, so I stayed in the moment and just kind of moved. You know, so these sort of things can help build you up. But like you said, you need to make sure that, you know, that taking the first step is what's important.
Yeah.
And using any sort of setback or failure to say, okay, well, where's the first step towards fixing this problem? Because if you look all the way to the end where you're like, oh, and then I'm perfect and right. never miss in a competition ever again, you're looking too far down the line to, it's going to feel really insurmountable if you do that. But if you break that down and say, okay, well, what are the little steps and the little ways of trying to change how I'm thinking? Whether that's, this week, I'm just trying not to get mad in traffic because the extra stress from my job or my, you know, commute or any of these things piles on and then leads to having an off training day. Or, you know, like, what are these little things that you can do to get things moving in the right direction without, I don't know, do you feel like people put, like, too much stress on themselves sometimes where, you know, they get caught bogged down thinking about the big problem or the long term and sometimes kind of lose the day-to-day like segmented goals?
Yeah, for sure. I think people we live in a very anxious society these days, and I don't know if maybe people were less anxious or they just knew less of what to call it or classify it as. But
I think anxiety is really symptomatic of, you know, how our society is kind of structured right now, where it's very caught up around, you know, social media, or, you know, like, I mean, how often, like you said, you had recently taken a week off of Instagram, or 2 weeks off.
Or not even taking off, just checking it less. Like, I just don't check it as often anymore.
And I know that, like, do you feel like that kind of helped reduce some of your daily anxiety? Because I know that, like, sometimes, like, I'll feel, like, anxiety about, like, oh, did I not like so-and-so's post? Or, you know, like, so, like, I think that...
It does, and it does reduce it. Well, for me, it's more like, why is this important? I'll check it, but my day isn't going to be centered around it. I don't have to feel obligated to like this amount of posts, or, you know, the less I open it, the less I worry about it, the less I, you know, wonder, the less I, you know, fear that FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. The less FOMO I have, because I'm not seeing anything that I wasn't involved with to begin with anyway.
And I mean, do you feel like, have you ever felt that when you follow a lot of other lifters, you sometimes, like, start, like, comparing yourself in a really negative way? Or you're like, oh, so-and-so just did this, man. Why can't I do that?
Yeah.
Or, like, where it's not, like, I think with... Well, now we're kind of tangentially talking about social media, but I think, you know, like, but it's that making comparisons thing.
Well, see,
where it's like, if one thing you can do to improve your training is stop worrying about what other people are doing and just focus on what you're doing and those little things that you can do better.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes, you know, if you're shifting from being inspired, seeing somebody do a lift that you want to be able to do, to being jealous of them doing the lift that you want to do. I think that's a fine line. It's too easily crossed, I think. It's hard.
I think a lot of times people, they put other people on pedestals and they idolize people more than they should. And anybody that you follow that's a weightlifter, they're not super famous. Like, if you think they are, ask your neighbor down the street who they are. They won't know. They don't know who any of these people are. Like, only you do. It's a small community. And, like, if I meet somebody, I don't get starstruck. Is it cool to meet them? Sure. Like, I've met, you know, some of the top weightlifters, and, you know, I've taken my fair share of pictures with one or two of them, but, like, I don't sit there and starstruck, and I don't get tongue-tied or anything like that. They're just regular people. They have school, they have jobs, they have families, they have parents, their brothers, or they're a sibling, or, you know, they're just like you. So I for some reason, I just don't feel the need to elevate people on a pedestal. I don't care if they're a national level coach. Like, you've talked to Ursula, she's the president of USA Weightlifting, and she's also the vice president of the IWF, but you've talked to her multiple times, like, and you still talk to her. Like, she came up to us the other day at AO Finals because Robin Goad, her son, was lifting. And it's not like, we didn't stand there starstruck and dumbfounded. It was like, hey, Ursula, how's it going?
And that, you know, going back to things that you had to practice is, one thing I really tried to make an effort to do this time is, in the past, you know, I have, you know, been intimidated talking to other coaches. And I think that's, you know, just a mark of my own anxiety and insecurity of, you know, just like, oh, what if they think my person has bad technique, or if I'm counting attempts wrong, or, you know, like, I get kind of bogged down in those things as well. So I really made an effort to kind of get myself out of my comfort zone and to try to, you know, just really talk to people more.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, say hi to somebody if you know who they are, and be like, hey, I'm a big fan of what you did here, you know.
Yeah. And exactly. It's just like you're acknowledging what they've done, right? But you're not idolizing them. It's just like, you know, Greg Everett's one of my favorite coaches. And I've gone up to him and I've said hi and I've asked him a question, and, you know, he's talked to me for a couple minutes, but I don't stand there awestruck and just, like, with my mouth gaping open, it's like, oh my God, it's Greg Everett. You know, I don't ever do that, because it's like, he's doing the same thing I'm doing. He just has a lot more experience at it. and he's very good at it. And he's built all this wealth of knowledge and experience up over a long period of time. So in my mind, I don't say, well, oh, he's this superhuman coach that I can never reach the status of. I just see him as another human being, as another person that has a different breadth and amount of experience than I do. That I'm not any less capable of being or knowing as much as he is, right? I just don't have the time and the experience. So when people like, you know, some of these Olympians, they come up and talk to you, like, they're there because they want to offer you their knowledge and their experience. Like, they'll have seminars sometimes in between, like, for AO finals. Like, they're not sitting there spouting about how great they are. They're telling you exactly how much like you they are. Like, I started here. I did this. And then I did this. And then I ended up here. Just like, not everybody's path is the same. But if it's humanly possible, then why aren't you capable of doing it?
Well, and I think that's the really important thing. The gist of kind of this this sidebar here is that embracing the fact, like, acknowledging, like, there's no difference between me and the person that did the thing that I want to do.
Right.
You know, it's just a matter of, you know, doing the things that lead you to that success state. And if you think that, you know, the people that you watch are doing these things that are unimaginable to you as, oh, I could never do that because they do that and I'm not as good as them.
Right.
It's like, no, you're not as good as them yet. Right. You know, you're building still. And at some point, their max was the same as your max. And I think that, you know, learning to have that confidence in your ability, not to suddenly magically have the kind of total that you want, but having faith in yourself to do the work and to do the little things that, you know, because if weightlifting was as easy as showing up to the gym,
yeah,
it would, I'd be a lot better.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, there are these, you know, little limitations, and everybody's got them, whether yeah. it's your mental game, your mobility,
Your age. Be realistic about where you're at in any of those areas.
And I think, you know, that kind of frees you to do the work required to get further than you would have if you thought these things were impossible. Because they're not impossible. They're
perfectly,
you know,
possible.
If your goal is to get to the American Open Finals, there was a D session for the 55 women. You know, there's a lot of people doing exactly what you want to do. It's not impossible. They're not superhuman. They're just like you are. They're working, they're lifting, they're training. And it's just, instead of trying to emulate their numbers, emulate their recovery strategy. Emulate the way they think about training.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not the big picture. It's the little things that make the difference in the long run. And like we've talked about before, I mean, weightlifting is a sport that you're a beginner till you've been doing it for 5 years.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. That maybe not quite that extreme, but I mean, like, you're not going to be hitting your stride for quite a while. And I think that instead of looking up to people's numbers, look at, it's like, oh, how do they structure their day to make sure that they train the best? Or, you know, like, what kind of, you know, exercises are they doing for mentality? Or how are they not stressing out between sessions? Or
try this. Find somebody that you can't stand that is a very good at something that you want to do and figure out how they're doing it. Because that'll help you overlook all the other stuff. Like, maybe they've got this shining personality. I'm saying, like, the people that you idolize have the shining personality, or they're very, you know, happy-go-lucky or positive. Find somebody that annoys you and is very successful at what they're doing, and then find out what they're doing. Then you'll overlook any of the positive, you know, things that other people associate with them. Find somebody that's really mean but is also very, very good and find out what they're doing and how they're accomplishing what they want to accomplish.
Yeah, I think there's just, there's so much to, you know, dive into with all of this kind of approach and how you're thinking about training and competition. And I think that it's a matter of, you know, like we said, taking those first steps.
Yeah.
Approaching it in a way that's positive rather than negative.
Right.
Not, I'm going to punish myself for not doing the thing that I wanted, but forgive yourself that slip up and take the little steps that'll, you know, work towards that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a lot to learn. For us as coaches and you as athletes, you know, and there's never going to be a one-size-fits-all solution.
Right.
And you're going to have to, you know, throw stuff at the wall till something sticks, you know. And it's not, I think, just not being defeated by a negative experience, but using that as an impetus for growth, I think is going to be the important takeaway from this, because
or don't even label it as a negative experience, just it's just an experience.
Detach yourself from
an outcome.
Exactly. You know, don't moralize your performance.
Right,
you had a bad day.
Yeah.
And I think as long as it leads you towards the direction and you know, touching back to, you know, what kind of kicked this off is, you know, at the end of the day, Consuelo still worked her ass off and qualified for that meet. And she didn't have the clean and jerk day that she wanted. But you know what? Next year's going to be better because we're going to take those steps and we're going to do that work. And not everybody's going to show up their first time and have a stellar day.
That's true.
You know, last year.
Yeah, look at the 96A session.
Oh my God.
The 96A's was terrible.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, last year, Tyler missed all of his clean and jerks at the American Open, and he came back this year and set a PR total.
Yeah.
He's one step closer to 300. So it's just using those experiences to kind of get yourself more in tune with yourself and do the little bits and pieces. And sorry, Consuelo, if you feel like we picked on you today.
Well, it's not just her, because I'm sure...
No, everybody struggles with this.
There's a lot of people that have this, and not in more than one way. Like, it may not be weightlifting related at all. It could be your personal life. It could be your career. It could be your dating life. It could be any number of things where just, like, people are... They're hindered by something that is an obstacle. And they just... You know, the obstacle isn't something that you need to avoid. It's something that you have to figure out how to use to your advantage and make yourself better for it.
Absolutely. But what do you think happened at that 96A session? Hold on, let's talk about this for a second.
All right.
Somehow, less than a third of the lifts attempted in the 96 kilo A session for the men were successful. And I have kind of a theory about this, in that, do you think that when there's that high a percentage of missed lifts in a competition, I think the best performance in that session was 3 for 6.
Yeah.
Do you think it's sort of contagious? Like, if you watch the first two people go out and miss all three of their snatches in a row, do you then look at your last warm-up and go, if they can't fucking do this, how am I going to be able to do this? Like, do you think it's a contagion of, like, you just see so many people failing that negativity creeps into the collective unconsciousness of the session? Or do you think that everybody was just, like, opening too high? Like, what? How does that sort of thing happen? Because it's happened before. I remember a few years ago, there was an 85-kilo men's session at Nationals that a similar thing happened, where it was just a ton of misses.
Yeah.
And it's just so bizarre, because you'd think that, you know, it's still an individual sport. You know, everybody's doing their own thing. So other people's performances shouldn't really dictate what you're doing. But how do you think that kind of pieces together? Like, what do you think that is when that happens?
I think it is, like, this collective energy that happens. Because if you've ever been to a concert and, you know, you're sitting in the crowd and the energy from the crowd is just like this thing that's alive and it's pulsing and it gives the music and the environment this electrical charge, right? That makes the experience what it is.
Yeah.
At being a live venue. And I think it kind of applies a little bit to this weightlifting thing where, like, there's a certain amount of momentum that gets created. And it could go in either direction. In this direction, it just happened to go completely downhill. I think there was one 6x6 performance, and that was in the C session of the 89 or the 90s. Was it 96?
96.
Yeah, so one 6x6, and that was from the C session. But I think that maybe in a way it was similar to what happened with the 55C women, to where they're all opening at the specific weight and then they start playing with numbers and jumping around, and instead of focusing on actually making lifts, they were too busy messing around with jockeying for position and scoreboard and trying to get themselves to a podium spot, that nobody made any lifts that they actually needed to get to a podium spot. So it's just, maybe that's like one of the things where that hyper focus on the big picture really, really caused them to fail, because all they needed to do was make lifts. If some of them had openers that they could have gone and smoked out right off the bat, it wouldn't have been a question of like, oh, well, you know, maybe I should bump this up. If one person would have stuck with it and just not worried about what the rest of the field was doing, that might have changed the whole scenario. But as it stood, everybody was probably vying for something or changing their lifts or making adjustments back there, and it just caused the whole thing to fall like an avalanche of red.
Yeah, I think that's a good example of the, you know, over focus on the big picture, because if you want a big total, the first step is making your first snatch.
Yeah, make a lift.
You know, that's, and build success from there, which is why I think, you know, opening kind of lighter is usually a pretty good idea, because if you make your first lift, well, of course you're going to make your second lift. If you make your second lift, of course you're going to make your third lift. Yeah. You kind of build that confidence, you know, like if you go out there and grind out and barely make your first lift, you're not going to feel super confident going into that second lift, and you need to make more than one to have the total you want. So maybe, you know, take that grindy second lift or first lift, push that to your second attempt, and at least get one on the board first.
Yeah.
Where you have an easy opener, where you're confident and ready to go.
Or maybe they were all trying to avoid being the first one. Just like that. Like that. It was like, I don't want to go first. It was like, well, somebody's got to go first. And if it keeps inching up, your opener keeps inching up, and you get less and less confident in your ability to make it. It's like, it's just going to end up seeing what we did that one session. So
yeah, that was crazy. Hopefully we get to avoid some of those in the future.
Yeah.
But I think all in all, successes and failures. Yeah.
It was so sad. Like, I was just watching the coaches' faces. They just all looked like they were standing around looking at, you know, a funeral. They're just this somber, like, terrible.
It was very air. Quiet,
yeah.
Back there.
One of the coaches, I saw him in the bathroom. He was just like pouring water over his face and just shaking his head in the sink. But yeah, I don't want any part of that. I'll have my lifters go first any day and make their openers than have that kind of nonsense go on. And
yeah,
and
for sure.
That I'm involved in.
So I think that overall, American Open, really successful experience, failures included, you know.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, so now we, for those that didn't have the day that they want, we know what we need to work on, and that's going to redouble our efforts. And those that, you know, had great performances, that's more impetus and more success to keep building on. And I definitely learned a lot. It was a record for us, and technically our first American Open as a gym.
Yeah.
So
oh, that's true. Yeah.
It's setting off to a good start, and I think that everybody's got room for improvement, and I'm excited to get everybody dialed back in and training hard again, and getting ready for whatever the next meet is for everybody.
Yeah, I learned a lot too. It was a good experience. I learned a lot about what not to do from some of the other coaches and watching how they interact with their athletes and the way they ran some of their sessions, like, oh, I'm not going to do that because that turned out really bad for them. The athletes taught me some things too, and continue to help make them better and, you know, just make their experience better overall in the coming meets in the next year. So
yeah, everything's always a work in progress. And as long as you're taking that next little step forward, you're going to get where you want to go, because like we said, I mean, everybody else started exactly where you're at.
Yeah.
And, you know, just keep putting one foot forward at a time and working on those areas that we need to improve as coaches and athletes. And there's no reason that you can't get the things that you want.
That's right. Just keep swimming, y'all.
All right, guys. Have a good one. We'll catch you next week.
All right. Happy lifting.